Well, this is a big pulpit to fill, and I don't just mean because Matt and my dad preach from this pulpit, although I do mean that. It's a big pulpit to fill because of you. I love this church so much. I love you all. So thankful for you all, and I feel the weight of preaching to a bunch of people that I love very dearly. And so I want us to pray again briefly and ask for the Lord's help before we start. Father, you know my sin. You know my weaknesses, my inadequacies. You know where I failed in my preparation. You know where I will fail in this preaching event. You know the failings of those that are here. You know the failings of how they will listen. And yet your word is more powerful than our failings. Your spirit is more powerful than our weaknesses. And you can do more than we could ask or think, because of the work of your son, Jesus. So we come to your word expectantly now. Pray all these things in your son's name, amen. Do I want to look good and be sick? Or do I want to look bad and be healed? Do I want to look good and be sick? Or do I want to look bad and be healed? This was the question the commander of the ancient Syrian army needed to answer. Meet Naaman, rich, powerful, successful. If he was alive today and living in Knoxville, Tennessee, he'd probably have one of those houses in Sequoia Hills along the Tennessee River. Probably had box seats in Neyland Stadium. Maybe a vacation home in Hilton Head. But this great leader had a great problem. A problem even he couldn't conquer. Leprosy. Naaman had leprosy. Now this skin disease that he had, it could have been easily cured today with antibiotics, but back then in the 9th century BC, this would have been completely debilitating. This leprosy, this skin disease, would have likely disfigured his face by the time we get to this passage in 2 Kings 5. This leprosy, this skin disease, would have just been ravaging his peripheral nervous system. He couldn't heal it. I'm sure shame weighed heavy on him. And even though he had all of the connections, he had all of the influence that he needed, nothing and no one could heal this disease. But then in 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 14, our passage this morning, he receives a prescription. Through the prophet Elisha, God writes up a treatment plan for Naaman, and if he'll follow it, he will be healed. The plan will work. Naaman just needs to follow doctor's orders. Here's the catch, though. While the promise is hopeful, the plan will humble Naaman even more than his leprosy. So he has a decision to make. Do I want to look good and be sick? Or do I want to look bad and be healed? That's his decision. Those are his choices. And as we'll see in a little bit, those are really just our choices as well. Before we make that choice, though, I just want us to consider verse 1. Verse 1, 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1, and consider our first point this morning, and that is a hodgepodge profile. Point number one of the sermon, a hodgepodge profile. Starting in verse 1, 2 Kings chapter 5. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor. But he was a leper. You know, in many ways, Naaman's LinkedIn profile looked really good. Actually, it looked more than really good. What does verse 1 say? Well, it looked great. It looked great. Naaman looked great. He was crushing it at work. He was BFFs with the king of Syria. He was known as a man of valor. Naaman wasn't a bozo. No. No, he had substance, courage. Think William Wallace in Braveheart or Mufasa in Lion King. He was someone you would respect. But Naaman had leprosy. His profile was a hodgepodge. A frustrating mixture of good and bad. He was kind of like us, right? We all, you, me, we all have a good side and we have a bad side, don't we? And I don't just mean when you're taking pictures for your LinkedIn profile or which side you want to look at in the mirror while you're brushing your teeth in the morning. No, our character, our stories, our questions, there's a good side. There's also a bad side. You may be very hardworking. Good side. But you have an anger problem that you've not been able to get a hold of. Bad side. 25-year anniversaries look great on Instagram. Good side. But when you don't have anything else to talk about with your spouse besides the kids and the date, it feels awkward because you don't know what to say. Bad side. Asking a friend for book recommendations is humble. Good side. But wondering if God is even real this morning? Bad side. We all have a good side and a bad side. And the interesting thing is that while we all know that, I mean, I think all of us know that, it's still scary to admit that, right? So here's what I want us to do this morning. I want all of us, let's just all decide together that each one of us are going to look at our bad side this morning. You're not going to be the only one looking at your bad side. Now, you're going to have people to the left of you and to the right of you and people across the room who are going to be looking at their bad side as well. Because here's the temptation. The temptation is that we'd focus so much on our good side that we forget that we have a bad side. To focus so much on your prestigious role as commander of the Syrian army and your success and your influence and your good character, that you never look at your leprosy. But if you want to be healed this morning, if you want to be spiritually healed, you need to admit that you're sick. Mark 2, verse 17, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Jesus came not to call the righteous, but sinners. Do you want to be spiritually healed this morning? Well, you can't pretend you're spiritually healthy. You've got to recognize you're spiritually sick. And after you do that, don't do what I do. Don't do what I do when I'm physically sick. Here's what I do. It's crazy, it's embarrassing, but I'll just give you an example. Okay, so I know that I don't floss like I need to. I know that. I know it's not good. I've seen the pictures at the dentist that are supposed to scare you into flossing more. You know the pictures that I'm talking about? You know, the pictures of people who don't floss. You know, it's terrifying. They look like they're creatures from the Lord of the Rings. Even still, I still don't floss. With one exception. The week before I visit the dentist, I floss like I'm an orthodontist. Morning and evening. And then on the morning of the cleaning, I don't even drink coffee. Actually, that's not true. But I think about not drinking coffee. Why? Why go to all that trouble? Because I want to look good. For some weird reason, I want the hygienist to be impressed by my unhealthy gums. But that's not the path towards healing. If you want healthcare providers that make you look good, you are not going to be healed. They're not going to be very helpful. They're actually going to be really unhelpful. Point number two, the sermon is an unhelpful healthcare provider. That's what we're going to look at next in verses 2-7. Starting in verse 2. Now the Syrians on one of their raids had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord, "Thus and so spoke the girl from the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." And when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Only consider and see how he is seeking a quarrel with me." Naaman doesn't listen to the servant girl, does he? No, not really. I mean, he goes to Israel like she tells him to, but he doesn't go to the prophet. He doesn't go to the prophet in Samaria. No, who does he go to? He goes to royalty. He goes to the king. He goes to the king in Israel, and he shows up looking good. He pops that trunk and bam, there's a bunch of silver in that trunk. He's got more gold coins than Chuck E. Cheese has tokens, and he's packed just an unnecessary amount of Armani suits. Why? Why? Well, because while Naaman wants to be healed, he also wants to look good at the same time. He wants to look good. And really, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, we want the same thing. Or at least I want that. I want to confess sin. But you know, if I play it right, if I show enough emotion, use the right words, you know, I can confess sin and look really good at the same time. It's a two-for-one special. I can look good and get healed in one confession. But you know what? You know this. That's false advertising, isn't it? I can't look good and be healed. This is what Naaman found out. After he gives this recommendation letter to the Israelite king, he quickly realizes that this king couldn't heal him. You know, I actually feel bad for this guy, the Israelite king. You just kind of feel bad for him. You know, when the Israelite king opens the letter, he's so stressed out that he tears his clothes. I mean, you know things are bad when you start tearing your clothes. This guy, this king, he blurts out, I can't heal this guy. Are you serious? I'm not God. I'm an unhelpful healthcare provider. Can you imagine how Naaman must have felt right now? Just put yourself in Naaman's shoes. Just swimming in all of this silver and gold. Having all of the clothes and the riches that you could want. Having lunch with royalty, looking amazing. But getting more and more sick. Yeah, I wonder if he was starting to get tired of the whole charade. Trying to look good while also trying to get healed. I wonder if your stamina is running out, like Naaman. You know, if you want to look good and be healed at the same time, I get it. I totally get it. Going to the king in Israel is just more palatable. But you know, I have a feeling that you're getting tired of that approach. I have a feeling this morning, as I'm just looking out at this room, I have a feeling that there are some of you that are just getting exhausted by trying to look good and be healed at the same time. I'm guessing you're getting tired of looking good and having to look for yet another unhelpful healthcare provider. Because it's exhausting, isn't it? It's exhausting trying to look good when you have leprosy, isn't it? Prayer feels like a burden. Having to edit your honest thoughts for pious ones. Home groups are good, but after another week of going and not sharing about what's really going on in your marriage, well, it's starting to feel heavier and heavier every week. And as you mask the depression, watching everyone sing loudly this morning, well, it's probably just terrible. Made you more hopeless than when you walked in. It's exhausting, isn't it? It was exhausting for me. In college, I spent a lot of time in the bathroom stalls at the old Basswood building. But it wasn't because I had to use the bathroom. No, the bathroom stalls in the old Basswood building, those stalls were my hiding place. The place where I hid my secret battle with anxiety and anxiety attacks. While I had always been prone to anxiety, the anxiety attacks began heading into my junior year of college. You know, they started at a Basswood home group. I remember where I was and who I was talking to when that first episode happened. And since it happened in front of someone, I was terrified that it would happen again in front of others, which, as you can imagine, just made the anxiety and the anxiety attacks worse. I couldn't get through a coffee without experiencing an anxiety attack. Without warning, my heart rate would spike. I'd start sweating, couldn't think straight. And there's only so many times you can use the restroom in a coffee meeting, so I tried to cancel any meetings that I could. I was terrified that someone would see my shame, that some of you would see my shame, that you'd see the anxiety that spilled out in those bathroom stalls. I was terrified that I wouldn't look good. Because I'm not going to lie, I looked spiritually impressive in college. I did. If you don't know me, I went to the University of Tennessee to go through their nursing program to become a missionary. I led student prayer meetings for our campus ministry at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. as a college student. That's impressive. My roommate actually told me one time, he said, Caleb, I've never met someone as spiritually impressive as you. But as my secret battle with anxiety continued to spin out of control, my impressive spirituality was becoming an incredible burden. And it was becoming a burden for really two reasons. I mean, for one, it was just getting tiring of looking good while everything in my life was going badly. But secondly, I was hoping my impressive spirituality would heal me. Instead of telling someone about what I was going through, I was hoping my evangelistic zeal and my Bible reading and the prayer meetings at 7 a.m., I was hoping those things would heal me. And they just weren't. They were like the king in Israel, unhelpful healthcare providers. It's not that there was any deficiency in those spiritual activities. It wasn't wrong for me to go to nursing school to become a missionary. It wasn't wrong to read my Bible early in the morning or have prayer meetings at 7 a.m. Those were good things. But I was looking for them to provide something they couldn't provide. While I couldn't voice it at the time, I was looking for the unconditional love of God, but I didn't think that unconditional love of God would be enough if my anxiety got exposed. So here's what I did. I looked for that unconditional love through spiritual activities that made me still look good. I looked for him through other channels, hoping that if I showed up to an Israelite king with a bunch of money and nice clothes, I might stumble on the healing that I desperately wanted. That was my plan. And if that's where you are this morning, if that's your plan, I just want to let you know I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that's where you're at. I know how exhausting that is. But I want to let you know there's another route. There is another plan. It's a humbling plan. A humbling plan that I hope you'll consider. Let's consider thirdly, a humbling plan, picking back up in 2 Kings chapter 5 in verse 8. But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent to the king saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come now to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman was angry and went away, saying, "Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Stop there. Let's just say that Naaman was not a fan of going to the Jordan River, was he? Verse 11 says he was angry, and verse 13 says he left Elisha's messenger ticked off. That's interesting. Why? I mean, I don't like following doctor's orders either, and self-righteous dentists who tell me to floss more aren't my favorite people in the world. But rage? Anger? What's so infuriating about this plan? I mean, it's very simple. It has a really hopeful promise attached to it. So why does Naaman leave in a tizzy? Why is he angry? Verse 13. You may know the answer. Naaman wants to be healed, but he does not want to look bad. And this plan would make him look really bad. Washing himself in an Israelite river would make him look really, really bad. You see, Syria had conquered Israel. Naaman had conquered Israel. So he's not supposed to need Israel's help. He does not want Israel's pity. Israel's supposed to need his help. Israel's supposed to want Naaman's pity. So this is a humbling plan. He vents about this in verse 12. He says, "Aren't there more honorable rivers in Damascus? Who do Elisha and his God think they are? I've gone into Israel and I've raided this nation. My wife has an Israelite servant girl. Humble myself and wash in an Israelite river? No chance. Not a chance. I would rather look bad and be sick." Well, you know, maybe we do not get as angry as Naaman, but we all have a little Naaman in us, don't we? We feel uncomfortable echoing the psalmist's doubts and fears and his raw and honest questions in the Psalms. We talk openly about our past, but that honesty doesn't apply to the present. Sick with sin, the one plan of salvation requires confession of sin, and we don't like that. So what do? We try to forget that James 5, verse 16 is in our Bibles, and we don't confess our sin to one another. Or at least the sins that are the more embarrassing sins. No, we want to be healed and look awesome at the same time. We don't want to confess the worst parts about us. Now, I'm not going to go all FBI interrogator on you here and put you in a dark room with a light bulb hanging from the ceiling and make you confess where you're hiding all of your sin. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to belittle confessions of pride and prayerlessness. You know, those are real sins and good confessions. But I think we all know that confessing pride and prayerlessness doesn't really move the needle on our appearance, right? No, actually, confessing pride and prayerlessness can actually still make us look good. Like the Abana and the Pharpar rivers in Damascus, they actually can make us look pretty good. And the danger for us this morning, the danger for us throughout this week, is that we stay in the rivers of Damascus. Rivers that make us look good. And we miss out on the blessing that God wants for us. The blessing that God has for us in the Jordan River. The blessing God has for us when we look bad. This was why God wanted Naaman to wash himself in the Israelite River, in the Jordan River. You know, he could have easily healed Naaman in Damascus. But God wanted something so much more for Naaman. He wanted something so much more for him than healthy skin. He wanted Naaman's heart. He wanted to show Naaman his heart. He wanted to show Naaman that he loved him, not because he looked good, but when he looked really, really bad. This is the revelation that's going to change Naaman. If we were to fast forward to the second half of chapter 5, we would see that this revelation is going to change Naaman's heart. He's going to pledge his allegiance to Yahweh. But for that to happen, God needed to humble Naaman. He needed Naaman to keep his silver and his gold and all of his Armani suits in the car and go to the one place he didn't want to go. Have you ever wondered if maybe that's why God has sovereignly allowed you to sin and suffer the way that you have? Maybe it's because God knew that's the one place you think his love can't reach. It's too serious. It's too embarrassing. It's too ongoing. It's too deep, you tell yourself. It's something that others should not see. Why can't God just privately wave his hand over that part of your life and make everything go away? Because he could. He totally could. Right now. That sin that you want gone, that you don't want others to see, right now, God could remove it entirely. No one would have to see. Why doesn't he do that? Why didn't he do that when you were begging him to do that this past week? Because he wants your heart. He wants your heart, Basswood. He wants to show you his heart. He wants to show you that true healing is not when you look good, but when you look bad. And for you to then realize in that place of looking bad that you have everything that you need. That's what he wants. It's a humbling plan. It requires you to keep your silver and your gold in the car. But there's a hopeful promise if you'll follow it. A hopeful promise. That's in our last point this morning. Consider that. Point number four, a hopeful promise. Picking up in verse 13. But his servants came near and said to him, "My father, it is a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it? Has he actually said to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Thankfully, Naaman had some friends who asked him to reconsider. Naaman, you sure, Father, that you want to look good and be sick? Sure you want to do that? Are you sure you don't want to look bad and be healed? I've been praying this week that God gives you friends like that. Friends who encourage you to bring your sin and the worst parts about you out into the open. Matt Hudson and my dad were those friends to me. Every so often I'll text Matt and thank him for a sermon he preached in the summer of 2014. I could be wrong, Matt, you can correct me. I don't think it was necessarily about confessing sin, but it was a sermon about living for eternity. And the way that he preached it, well, that was the sermon that led me to be willing to look bad and be healed. It was a sermon that pushed me over the edge. And I thought, I've got one vapor of a life. Just one. I'm tired of looking good and being sick. I'm ready to look bad and be healed. So I thank him every so often for that sermon, because after that sermon ended, I made a beeline to my dad. I went to the Jordan River and I told him everything. I looked really, really bad. Like uncontrollable weeping, snot all over my dad's shoulder bad. It was one of the best days of my life. Not because the anxiety went away. No, anxiety is still an everyday struggle for me. Still get anxiety attacks every so often. But in that moment, God began healing me in a better way, in a deeper way. He began to heal me in a way that I wasn't expecting in the moment. He was showing me that I could look really, really bad and everything was going to be okay. Because of the gospel, because of Jesus' love for me, there wasn't a place that I could go that I could look bad enough where Jesus would have said, I'm done. It's too much. He showed me that the deepest healing happens when I look my worst. He showed me parts of his heart that I never knew existed. And God used your pastors, Matt and Ronnie, to be the friends that I needed. Those are the friends that I'm praying for you right now, for you to have. I want you to have friends like Naaman, who didn't give up on him, but asked him again, "You sure you don't want to go to the Jordan River, Naaman? You can be clean. Just think about it. Do you want to look good and be sick? Or do you want to look bad and be healed?" This was the linchpin conversation that Naaman needed. Because in verse 14, he goes. He goes to the Jordan River, sacrificing his honor, walking past the mocking stares. He goes to the Jordan River and he dips himself once, twice, three times, four times, five times, six times, seven times, healed. This is so typical of God. This is what he does. He never leaves his people in the river alone, ashamed. And when they look bad, he shows up. He shows up with healing. When we show up in weakness, God shows up in power. When we bring him our sin, he brings us his salvation. When we look bad, we're healed. And that's a promise. That is a promise. James 5, verse 16. "Confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed." People debate whether this healing is physical or spiritual. But I love what a pastor in Nashville, Sam Alberry, says about this verse. Trying to figure out whether it's physical or spiritual. This is what he says. He says there's kind of two different ways that we could go about trying to figure out what we think about James 5, verse 16 in this healing. He says that one thing that we could do is we could all learn Greek, and we could look up all of the Greek uses of this word in the New Testament and other ancient Greek literature, and read the best commentaries, and we could kind of come to a conclusion. He said that's one thing you could do. You guys could do that if you wanted to. He says, or another option is we could just confess sin to each other and just see what happens. I love that. What if y'all did that? What if you decided to look bad and be healed? I don't know exactly what would happen, but I do know that God would forgive your sin. I do know that God will honor you when you humble yourself. I do know that confession of sin is a mark of revival. Ever since I was in high school, we had prayer meetings here at Basswood praying for a revival. And I want to let you know, you're not going to experience revival if you look good. It doesn't work that way. Never has. Look at every revival in church history. They never looked good doing it. Confession of sin, as it's been noted before, is a central mark of revival. You want to experience the Spirit's power at Basswood, you have to start looking worse. I know that confession is a mark of revival. And I know God has used confession of sin to do amazing things. Years ago, there were some students at Oregon University, the University of Oregon, that decided to do something a little unconventional. There was a square, a heavily trafficked square at the university where students would go, and I think sometimes they would maybe have like protests in this square, maybe even some evangelists that would go there. And they decided to go to this square and to set up a booth and get a big megaphone. And these students decided that instead of addressing the sins at the University of Oregon, the students that were walking by, and the professors and the classes, instead of addressing those sins, which wouldn't have necessarily been bad to do, they decided to do something different. These students decided to set up this booth and get this megaphone, and they got up there and they confessed their own sins. What they had done, the way that they looked bad to all these students and professors that were walking by. That's powerful, isn't it? And you don't have to do exactly that. You don't have to go down to the University of Tennessee, link up with Chad and figure out a way to be able to do this. Maybe you could, that would be amazing. But don't you kind of want to be a part of something like that? You can. You can. You know, this isn't drawn straight from 2 Kings 5. I'm just kind of pulling from different biblical principles here. But you know, we've been talking a lot about confession of sins. So I just thought it'd be helpful to kind of walk through three different principles to think about as you're considering what it looks like to confess sin. You can tease me at lunch later about this cutesy acronym later, but hopefully it helps you remember the few biblical principles on how to be able to confess sin. As you can think about confessing sin, here's what I would encourage. Confess sin specifically. Specifically. Second, confess sin incrementally, and confess sin nervously. S-I-N, specifically, incrementally, nervously. First, confess sin specifically. You know, vague confessions of sexual sin or anger or other sins usually just make us look better than we are if we keep it vague. You know, but when you decide to tell your friend exactly what you said to your child, and you detail the kind of anger that you felt in your heart, well, now you're starting to get closer to the healing you're looking for. Confess sin specifically. Secondly, confess sin incrementally. You're welcome. I'm just going to caveat this point. You're welcome to just throw this point out completely and just rush to the Jordan River this afternoon and just cannonball into it and just confess everything. You're welcome to do that. Maybe for some of you, that's what you should do, seriously. But I will say that if you're wondering if you can trust someone, whether you can confess sin to them, you are welcome to confess sin incrementally. Just a little bit. Just confess a sin that makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable and just see how they respond. See if they're a safe person to open up to you. And then as you kind of sense that safety, then go a little bit deeper into the river, a little bit deeper. A little bit deeper. You're welcome to ease your way into the river of confession. But while you're welcome to confess sin incrementally, I would encourage you to confess the sin you don't want to confess. The sin that makes you nervous to talk about. Thirdly, confess sin nervously. Why? Why confess the sins that make you nervous to talk about? Because that's probably the area where you're not believing the gospel. That sin seems more powerful than Jesus' blood. That shame sounds louder than Jesus' intercession. That guilt feels heavier than Jesus' embrace. But here's the deal. When you decide to voice that sin, the sin that makes you nervous, when you voice that sin, you are stepping out and having to trust in the gospel in that moment. That's all that you got. Because you look really, really bad. And when you stand out there and step out and you look really, really bad and you confess that sin that makes you nervous, you get to experience the joy that Jesus offers of him just embracing you. That's what I want. That's what I want for you, to experience the reception that Jesus can offer. We're almost done. I just want to let you know, there is just so much power in honesty, isn't there? So much power in it, to bring your sin out into the open. Now, I'm convinced that's why some people leave the church. As others have pointed out, I think that may be why some people leave the church. You know, they've hid their sin for so long, just terrified that if it comes out in the open, they'll be shunned, they'll be embarrassed, they'll be ostracized. So they leave the church so they can pursue their true desires. And if we're being honest, there's something freeing about that. There is something freeing about that. But please hear me very loudly right now. It's a shallow freedom. If that's where you are, if you're considering that, it's a shallow freedom. And here's why. Whatever group that you run to when you leave the church, if you leave the church, which I pray you don't, whatever group you go to, they're just going to have their own list and set of moralistic rules that they're going to hold you to. Things that keep you in or out of their group. And the reality is if they have their own moralistic rules, it's going to eventually come to their attention that you're not meeting them. And they're going to push you to the margins too. Or you're going to revert back to hiding those different morals that they hold dearly to. Why? Well, because there's no sub-gospel community that can truly see the worst things about you and fully love you. Only Jesus. Only the gospel provides that for you. To paraphrase Tim Keller, he says, we all want two things. To be fully known and fully loved. Fully known and fully loved. And only in Jesus do we get both. He fully loves us. He sees all of our sin. He fully loves us. He went to the cross to die for that sin. Fully known, fully loved. Why not head to the Jordan this afternoon and experience that reality? You can. You can. Why not head down to the Jordan as a church? Not just individually. What if this whole church went to the Jordan together? Don't you want to be a part of that kind of community? I do. That's the kind of church I want to be a part of. I want to pastor, I want to lead. Church that looks bad and experiences gospel healing. That'd be an exciting New Year's resolution, wouldn't it? To look bad and be healed. To look worse in 2025. Not be worse. Hear that. No, follow Jesus more closely in 2025. But the reality is, right, if we're being honest with ourselves, is that everyone here, you guys just look better than you are. Let's just kind of just admit that. You guys have not looked as bad as you could look. I have not looked as bad as I could look. Still working on this. So why not have a New Year's resolution, individually or perhaps as a church, to look bad and be healed? You have to make that decision. No one else can make it for you. Do you want to look good and be sick? Or do you want to look bad and be healed? Let's pray. Father, there are people here that are doing mental calculus. They're in Naaman's shoes, counting the cost, deciding if it's worth it. What is more important, looking good or being healed? Free them, Father. Free them from the power of wanting to look good. Show them through the gospel, through what your son did on the cross, there's something so much better than looking good. Show them the healing that only your son provides. You can do that. Through your spirit and your word, you can do that. So we look to you. In your son's name. Amen.